Accession number 23221, Reel 5.
Major Mole, Reel 5.
You were saying, I think, that the second in command was now in effect the acting CO.
He definitely was, yeah, he was commanding.
And had he managed to slip into that role smoothly?
Oh, yeah, he was an experienced. I think General Rickord had commanded the Ulster Rifles, one of the Ulster Rifle Battalions, at Arnhem or something. He was very experienced, in fact, in many respects. He was a bit better.
So you're stepping up again back to an old role rather than taking on a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
So he presumably would have placed the companies.
Yeah.
And then you would have decided where the mortars could best be.
Well, I suppose he would have come round to see the company commanders, and I would have been with him, those two companies up at the... probably the FOO and myself and the CO and the company commander would have decided where the DFSOSs were to be. And we also had a section of machine guns up there as well, and they could lay.
Presumably they would have a different sort of trajectory to your...
Exactly, they would be firing across. And
That's
right. Mm. They were, I'm not quite sure how they did it, but they would, for example, if the machine gun position on D Company would be firing across the front of A Company, and the one at A Company would be firing down into the valleys across.
This is really trying to catch them in flank, as
enfilade far from them.
Was there any possibility of constructing obstacles in front of the firing positions? Or was this just...
I think there was odd sort of... we hadn't much time. Mm. I don't think there was much, and I think there was the odd sort of grenade tied on with bits of wire and that sort of thing, and down below it's a warning things and tins. I think people use tins and things to warn us down in the valleys, but it wasn't really much time to get much up in the way of defences, as I remember it.
What you're saying about the, you know, it being heavily wooded, it sounds like it might have been rather difficult to clear fields of fire for the...
It was, yes.
Company.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And did the vegetation come right up to the positions, or was there...
Yeah, fairly close up, if I remember.
What sort of vegetation was it? Was it the same sort of... You mentioned that earlier on, in Happy Valley, it was sort of scrubby pine.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah. Exactly what it was. And quite rocky up there, and quite sort of... Mm. And so from there on, I mean, the situation developed. The A Company, during the night and the next night, was attacked quite heavily. I think in all they were attacked 16 times, although there were thrusts up and such, but they managed to control the situation very... I didn't give a very heavy attacks, but there were quite a lot of attacks. D Company, where I was, on the other ridge, was not actually positively attacked much at all. I was sort of near D Company, and attack headquarters was just there in that position.
Who was in the attack headquarters? There was you, the commanding officer, acting commanding officer.
I suppose his signal and... I don't know if the IO was there or not. Intelligence officer may well have been. I think he was probably back.
Had you got yourselves dug in to any extent?
A little bit. A little bit dug in, but not very strongly, I don't remember.
How did your comms function at this time? Were you able to keep in touch with your mortars?
Oh, yes. Quite definitely, yeah. Mm. And it was... it was quite interesting because the way it had been sorted out, CO decided, CO controlled, as it were, D Company and A Company up at the top, and C Company and B Company must have been in the valley, B Company particularly on the position at the back where the mortars were and presumably where the rest of battalion headquarters were. There was a chap called John Shaw, who was a support company commander, who is a tremendous soldier, quite a little martinet, and he was basically acting as in command of those two companies at the back and sort of liaison with the brigade commander because the CO had opted to be up on the hill. And he came up on after the first night to see the CO and to give, presumably to pass on the orders from the brigade commander, Liège. And I remember him coming to me, and he said to me, looked me up and down, we talked for a bit, and he said, "John, I don't think you've shaved this morning." And I said, "No, I haven't had time really, and there's not much water up here." And he gave me, he was a good friend of mine, he gave me a very severe look, and he said, "John, I can see no reason whatsoever why you can't shave. Officers should set an example, you should jolly well shave." So I thought, "Well, I'm sorry, I'll do that, you know." And the next night, after the second night, he came up the next morning, having had a very fierce time in the valley, where beginning to be quite a bit of fighting around. And he came up, and he again came up to me, and this time he hadn't shaved. And he looked me up and down, and I had shaved the second morning. And he looked at me and smiled, because he hadn't had a chance to shave, and I had. And he was killed very shortly afterwards, but I thought it was a very, I always remember that as a particularly strong thing of sort of strength of command and leadership. So really, those memories all fused together as to those two nights up there. And then...
You're saying Chinese made a series of persistent but not very strong attacks against A Company.
Yeah.
Kept coming back.
Yeah.
What do you think they were trying to do?
Well, I think they were clearly trying to take the A Company's position without any question. And I think there was some pretty fierce fighting there.
Mm. What sort of tactics were they using? Were they using frontal assault with massed waves, or were they trying
to... I think they were trying to sort of creep up at night, creep around, get up and... And they were, no, I think it was a jolly good defense. The A Company did very well, and I suppose there was a lot of we were firing a lot of mortar fire at night, and the artillery were firing a great deal, and so there was a lot going on.
Did the Chinese have any heavy weapons in support of their attack?
No, we were not being, at that stage, there was no question of us being shelled or anything. We weren't being. I mean, my own sort of situation during the whole of this Imjin thing was, I don't think I was actually hardly fired on at all, individually, personally, which was a nice position to be in. But it was going on all around me.
What about your tanks? Were they there during the daytime and withdrew at night?
Or the tanks were in the valley. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely around on the... But they obviously withdrew into a lager at night back near the B Company position, I think.
During this time, this couple of nights and the day in between, were you static or were you moving around?
Me personally?
You personally.
Well, I suppose I was really static with the CO. I think I had another sergeant forward with A Company doing that part of the MFC, and I was with D Company. It's just a sort of fairly confusing memory of the whole situation, and also a worrying time because, you know, one had no idea what was happening. And I remember sort of saying, thinking how on earth we were going to get out of there, because we knew the Gloucesters had been surrounded, etc., and we knew the guns at the back were under fire. And it was sort of considered, you know, it would be really rather loopy to go down the main road, which was under fire. And the logical thing was to break into small groups and move back that way. I mean, I remember discussing that and thinking that would be the sensible thing to do.
Well, exfiltrate, effectively.
Yes.
Yeah. What about the idea, did you have any idea there might be a formation coming up to relieve you? Or
I think there's some Negro battalion was sent up to try and assist or something, but no, we didn't really think was any question of that. We weren't under attack anyway, but we didn't really, we were under attack, but we didn't really expect, we didn't really know what was happening, because it was a massive attack.
You thought you were just on your own and you were going to have to find your own way?
Well, I suppose we thought we would stay there and then eventually withdraw. I mean, that was obviously what was going to happen. I mean, the army wasn't in position, Concord. The army wasn't in a position of, the American army wasn't then in a position to to produce enough troops to go forward, because if it had more troops, we wouldn't have been in that strung-out position on the Imjin. But the brigade really clearly took the brunt of the Chinese assault, which was really to gain capture Seoul.
How did your resupply system hold up for mortar ammunition? Did you manage to keep...
Well, the mortar, with plenty of mortar ammunition at the at B Company position, at the mortar position now. So there wasn't a problem about that.
Well, I mean, was there a line of communication open still down the main road?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. That was still open.
So they could bring up rations, ammunition.
Yeah, and I can remember the porters coming up, the Korean porters coming up with rations and that sort of thing. No, it was still, I mean, although there was a certain amount going on, and quite a lot going on around about, it was still, you know... I mean, the one who had the most difficult time was this chap, John Shaw, who was moving around in the valley where there was beginning to be quite a lot of firing.
Did the Chinese keep up the pressure equally in daylight as well as at night?
Not on our positions, no, but in the valley and behind, yes, they were beginning to. And then the order came through to withdraw completely. And I can remember the CEO giving instructions, and I remember for some extraordinary reason I had a camera up there, and I remember going to take a photograph of a chap called Paul Docker, who was commanding D Company. And he was very cross with me. He said, "It's very bad luck to take a photograph of like this in war or something. Seems odd to me." And I did take a photograph of a group of people, and he was killed a little bit later, so I felt that was a dirty trick. Anyway, a section of mortars was then moved up from B Company to be behind the hill where we were coming down, and I was ordered by Gerald Rickord to have these mortars, these forward section of mortars, and to fire and to stay there till the very end, till all the whole companies had moved out and everybody had moved out, and then when everybody had moved to for the mortars to come out and to fire just generally where the positions we'd left over those, and to keep anybody from getting up on those positions while the battalions, while these two companies were moving out. So that's what we did, and I can remember the whole battalion, the company's march going past us and us standing in a firing very heavily. We weren't under fire at all, on these positions which we'd just left. And that went on for probably half an hour to an hour or something.
What sort of rate of fire do you think you were putting down at that stage?
I can't remember really, but you know, nothing terribly heavy, but just generally persistently firing.
So I assume the idea was to put down a screen of mortar fire and stop the Chinese pursuing.
Well, yes, sort of, you know, in the valleys over just in front of where we'd been, to cover those and make sure they didn't come up whilst the battalion was moving out. I mean, it's a pretty naive sort of thing, but that's basically what I suppose the concept was.
What about the artillery? Were they giving similar fire support?
I imagine they must have been. But you then remember that the artillery was supporting the Northumberland Fusiliers and the Gloucesters, who were in a much more serious position than we were, because we weren't really in a very serious position at that stage.
What about the 4.2-inch mortars? What were they up to?
They must have been doing much the same as the Royal Artillery. I mean.
So essentially you were the heavy fire support for the withdrawal of the...
Of those two forward companies,
yeah. How long did it take them to actually get out of their positions and come back through your mortar lines once they'd started moving?
Well, we were all moving together virtually. I can remember walking down with them, companies. They'd already started to move down, and it was fairly rapid. It wasn't exactly a bug out, but bloody nearly. And I can remember them all sort of walking off and feeling a bit lonely as we were left there.
On your own?
Yes, with two Bren gun carriers and our, I suppose Gerald Rickard thought it was a morale boost for the battalion to see us firing away.
When they started coming out, did they pull out the two forward platoons first, and then the rear.
Yes, they must have done that, but it was down from the hill, as it were. And then they all scuppered off, as it were.
How long were you there on your own then before you were able to follow them?
Well, I suppose we were. There again, it's difficult to. I suppose we were there half an hour or an hour possibly, I don't know. But it was. And then came the question. There were a few people scattered around, some of the last people coming, the last platoons coming down. And then it was the problem, and this is how I've always never been quite clear in my mind as to exactly what happened. But it was obvious there was no much point in us staying much longer. And so there was then quite a large number of men around. Must have been the last parts of D Company and A Company come around. And I think one of the D Company officers had opted to stay with some wounded men up on the thing and was captured. So they didn't have to inquire. And there were quite a large number of people around. So I... then decided that, and there was quite heavy firing down the valley a bit, and I decided the best thing to do was to go cut off left into the hills like so many people did at that time. And I ordered the Bren gun carriers to go out if they could, because they would, and if not, to just ditch them and bail. And I've subsequently wondered whether that wasn't rather a naughty thing to have done. I should have gone with them, but then I think I felt at the time that my responsibility possibly as an officer was to try and help leading these other people out. And there was a sergeant major there called McConville, and he and I sort of formed up what was left of these groups, and we started off.
Were these chaps effectively stragglers who got?
No, I think they were stragglers really, but they were the last sort of group of people coming down from the hills.
How many of them were there, do you think?
I think we must have been about between 30 and 40 by the time.
Some strongish platoon.
Yeah. Mm. So we decided then to make our way east towards, we had no idea really what it was, but there wasn't seem much point going down with this tremendous firing and stuff going on in the valley, and there was not much at that side, so we decided, we went off that way, and there was an odd bit of firing, but we didn't really come across very much. The Chinese hadn't got to that side, they were all on the other side.
So they were west of you rather than east.
That's right. And so I don't know how long it took us, but we got out. Up, and there was an American Ranger battalion where we got onto the MSR. This is where the Belgians had gone that way. And subsequently, quite a few of these other people had gone down the valleys, moved into groups that way, including this chap Gordon Potts in his account of the battle later when he went down from A Company. He went down and eventually he went up that way too, because it was obvious a lot of the people going down the valley that continued down the valley, as was the original plan, was really suicide. And lots of people had got on the tanks, including A Company commander, who was taking some of his company out, and his name was Major Sir Christopher Nixon Bart. He was a tremendous character. And he was wounded for the third time, I think, going out on those tanks.
Sounds as though you were executing a manoeuvre which was known, I think, as retirement to the flank rather than retirement to the rear.
Yes, that's exactly. I think it was sauve qui peut more than anything else by that stage.
Sidestep too.
That's right. I mean, it really by that stage had got into the question of, you know, individual platoon commanders, people trying to make a decision the best way to withdraw. And I think always at the back of my mind it felt that that would be the best way to go out.
Had you had orders about where you were supposed to head for once you'd broken contact and got...
Well, I suppose to the rear. I suppose we had been given some instruction.
I'm just wondering whether there was a battalion RV.
There must have been. I mean, I think we weren't particularly clear. We were told we have to withdraw back through B Company, through these other companies, and then presumably you would expect to be told. Mm. But by this time, it had got a bit chaotic. Mm. I didn't feel that what we'd done was particularly distinguished, to put it mildly. But on the other hand, I suppose we had given a lot of morale boost with our staying on with the firing of the mortars. And anyway, this chap McConville and myself led this group through, and we managed to get out. And he subsequently got the DCM for that particular.
What was the ground like over which you were withdrawing during this movement?
Well, it was sort of weird. The bottom part was sort of valley with sort of rice fields and things and paddy fields and things, and then up again, quite high ground up towards quite big hills again up towards the east, where this ranger battalion was, and eventually I remember coming up towards them and they shouting at us and wondering whether we were Chinese or what the hell we were, and then letting us through, and then onto the, there was a fairly good route, MSR there, and somebody walked down there and got into vehicles and presumably went back. And
what state were the rangers in when you saw them? Were they in good order?
I think they were quite reasonable. They were a bit jumpy because they didn't know what the hell was going on, and nobody did.
When you were doing this movement, were you moving on the high ground, or were you having to go into the low ground as well and move through there?
Well, we were basically going through the paddy fields and then slowly, as quickly as possible, making our way up into the hills. So we were really going up the ridge lines, I suppose.
What sort of formation did you use for that withdrawal to flank?
Well, I think we just moved in sections. Single file, sort of one section and another section. It wasn't particularly distinguished or planned.
How long did that take you then before you got to the Rangers? Do you have any idea of the length of time you were in that withdrawal?
I suppose it must have taken an hour, a couple of hours, yeah. I think. I can't remember.
And no contact with the enemy during this? Movement.
Not really, no. No, with odd sort of shots being fired across the valley and the odd shot, etc. No, we didn't. We were very lucky.
So you got to the Rangers, they let you through. What was their position like? Was it the same sort of position as you would have made, or didn't you know?
I don't think it was a proper position at all, because they'd just been put in there as a plugging thing, and they were just up on the hill and with their presumably a few rangers and presumably a gunner officer and that sort of thing. It wasn't a proper position, but because it had been just an ad hoc position, I suppose they'd been sent up to hold that when the Belgians came down, and because the Belgians had gone out then down that road.
And so you went on the MSR. Presumably this was American transport.
I think we must have just managed to get a lift or walk down. See, the awful thing is, my memory is just not clear as to what happened then. Presumably we just got out and then met up with, military police must have been down there and, you know, said, "Are you our stragglers," or whatever it is, to there, and then we must have met up with the rest of the town back there. But then, you see, the town was pretty average chaos then, because we'd lost a lot of men. A great number of people being killed on and the tanks coming down. It must have been pretty chaotic.
Presumably also there'd have been people who got lost during the...
Yeah, that's right. Mm. So it was a cock-up. The whole of the Imjin battle was a cock-up, but it was a cock-up mixed with some tremendous fighting. I mean, there was no question about it. A Company did extremely well, and B Company... in that position, well, the battle patrol went forward that first time. A Company had some very fierce fighting up on that ridge line, and B Company subsequently holding the the pass, as it were, through which everybody was to come with the tank. They were involved in some pretty fierce fighting and nasty fighting, because the Chinese were coming all around them.
They were on the flanks and rear, as well as in front.
That's right. So I was, in fact, lucky to get out the way I did, or sensible to get out the way I did, and avoided most of it. So my battle of the Imjin, as far as I was concerned, I didn't really come much under fire, although I was involved.
There's a contrast to what had happened to you at Happy Valley, isn't it?
Much contrast.
You've been very close.
Yeah, I actually been involved in fighting. Yeah.
So you got back in the transport, and the battalion was presumably getting itself
real. And we must have been sent again. I'm not clear as to what happened. To refresh my memory in here, but I imagine the battalion was the whole brigade was moved quite a long way back. What was left of it, because it was no longer really a fighting force. the Crosses had ceased to exist virtually. Northumberland Fusiliers had suffered very heavy casualties, including their seer, and we'd suffered quite heavy casualties too. In that thing, so the whole brigade was very shaken.
Do you have any sort of idea of roughly what the scale of loss had been to the battalion?
I think we certainly lost about three or four officers were killed in that, and possibly 50 or 60 men and a large number of people were captured, of course. So it must have been in the region of 100.
Now, this was the second time you'd had to do a withdrawal in contact,
effectively. Yes, yes, yeah.
And had been quite badly mauled in the process. Did this have any visible effect on the fighting spirit of the troops that were left?
Well, I suppose it must have done. It must have done. And again, I have very hazy memories of what happened then, but we had some new company commanders came up from reserve, and I think the battalion fairly quickly knocked into shape again. The Irishmen were very good soldiers, and they seemed to be quite... It wasn't as if we'd suffered tremendous casualties. It was...
Do you have any notion of how long it took to actually reconstitute the battalion back into reasonable condition?
I think it must have been a period of weeks, at least, when people came up and reorganized, etc.
Had your mortar platoon suffered badly during the fighting?
No, they hadn't, really. And the awful thing is, I cannot, to this day, remember whether those mortar carriers got out or not. It's a sort of blot on my escutcheon and memory, but they must have done, I think. I hope.
So you're out of it again for a while you're reconstituting. What's your next clear memory after the Imjin fighting?
Well, really, the next clear memory was eventually, again, I'd have to remind myself, but I think we then subsequently moved back into that after, I think the division was being formed at that time.
Commonwealth Division.
The Commonwealth Division. And I think we moved up again then towards the Imjin positions because the Chinese had been eventually knocked back. But we weren't involved in that fighting. Mm. But you see, the Chinese, the Imjin battle had in fact blunted the major Chinese thrust towards Seoul. And they did not really get any further. So it had, in fact, been a sense of victory, but a rather strange one. And so eventually, subsequently, the battalion moved back up to those sort of positions again.
Did you occupy exactly the same sort of positions as the battalion, or were you readjusted?
You'll have to let me try and think. Mm. Right, the 26 and 10th battalion rested, fitted at Yongdongpo. Colonel Carson resumed command. The total casualties in this recent action now establishes 10 officers and 100. Got it quite wrong. 10 officers and 176 other ranks, a large number of whom were missing. The battalion was considerably below strength and deficient of a high proportion of such essential items of equipment as 2-inch mortars, Bren guns, wireless sets. Very shortly, replacements on the 27th draft, 2 officers and 90 other ranks arrived. 29th Brigade had suffered 1,000 casualties in the Imjin battle. The Glosses were hard ahead. We were only able to raise one company. The other three battalions, one Northumberland, the Belgians, were able with arrival replacements to reform in a few days, and on the 28th.